Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 22nd, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know, that was the longest we have ever gone without talking or communicating.
It was. I think I might have sent you one email.
Yeah, it was like at the tail end, too. It was like, did he die? I haven't heard from him, and I think Laura might have been with you for some of this trip. I'm not sure. Is that true?
Yeah.
So if something happened to you, I would never have known. It's like four days.
In the Everglades.
So obviously we won't talk about your trip today because we got other big news from the World Series, but we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, I went down to South Florida again, which is always good. Always something new going on there, so definitely will let folks know about that next week. But I did want to bring up, I played one tournament. I was crazy busy, which is why you didn't hear from me.
Uh-huh.
I played one tournament one night at the end, tail end of a bunch of meetings. And first of all, my new most hated player was in this tournament.
It's not me anymore?
Well, just for the sake of the show, the new most hated player. You're always going to be the most hated player. So somebody was all in, right? And then you have the customary, how much is it, dealer, right?
Yeah.
No problem. But there's this Carnival Barker player guy now that has to guess the chips as the dealer's counting them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's like, oh, looks like it's a 7,100, maybe 6,900. No, oh, 6,850, I think. Like he's trying to guess the number of jelly beans in a jar at Applebee's so we can win a free dessert or something.
You're not supposed to do that anyway, right? They should have, like, nipped it in the bud. Keep your mouth shut.
But here's the thing. I mean, what's the upside? Are you trying to show your savant skills? And if you are, stick with one total and hope you're right. I mean, you keep adjusting the total. It's not impressing anything, right?
Five chips to Wapner.
And it's like 12 chips total, too. So, I mean, even if you did nail it right on the... Oh, great. I'm playing freaking Rain Man.
How impressive.
The dealer's going to have it counted in literally 7 seconds. You really got to be the first one out. Hey, it's 7,100. I just don't get it. I just don't get why people feel like they have to do that. But anyhow, that's not what I wanted to bring up. We don't have a call to the floor this week, but hopefully we'll have a couple for the next couple weeks. We got some good submissions in this week, so once Jody gets caught up on them. But I had a baby call to the floor situation that came up that I thought was interesting. So a table broke, and about three players came to our table, right?
Mm-hmm.
Particular... venue gives you a chip rack to carry your chips, which I always like. I'm not entirely sure you're required to. But anyhow, all these players put their chips in a rack, right, and brought it over.
Right.
Guy, I'm in the two seat, I think. So this guy puts his chip rack down in the four seat, turns around, I guess, to get his beer or whatever, I don't know, and then turns back around and he's like, what happened to my great chip? Now in this tournament, great chips were 5,000. There weren't a lot of them on the table. They just colored up at that point. So, you know, everybody had like one or two or three or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So in his chip rack, he had them, you know, separated by denominations. And then he had just this loose great chip hanging in one of the little, what do you call it, wells or whatever.
Yeah, rack,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're right.
So he claims when he put it down, it must have popped up like a fish coming out of the keys. And... fallen on the ground or something, right? And he's like, I had a 5,000 unit chip. And of course, you know, the dealer, like, I didn't see it. I don't know. And then the players, I mean, I know when players come in, sometimes they're supposed to be sizing up, you know, Greg Raymer tells you, you're supposed to be checking out their chip stacks, right? But, you know, a $40 tournament, I mean, who's really doing that, right? So yeah. I don't think anybody actually ever paid attention to actually verify that he did have a grade chip and now where the mystery grade chip went. So while this is going on, the dealer's already dealt the hand, right? This player is under the gun, and he's like, I need to find my grade chip. So now everybody's, like, you know, scouring out like they're on CSI South Florida now, trying to find this grade chip on the ground that we may or may not exist. And we're looking around, and meanwhile, the clock is running, because it's a tournament, right? Other tables are flying. Everybody's looking around, moving the, hey, did you look there? Oh, yeah, I looked there. Oh, look there again, blah, 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 blah. And at this point, so one of the other players at the, this guy keeps barking. He's like, you know, I just won a big pot, and the grade chip was in the pot. And so the dealer asked one of the other players that came to the table, yeah, yeah, he did just win a grade chip. He should have a grade chip. So we think he should have a grade chip, but the hand is still going on.
Right.
And we're looking around, can't find, no one can find it, right? So while he's looking for it, he's like, he looks at his cards, he's like, well, I'm all in anyhow. So he pushes the chips that he does have in front of him into the pot. Okay.
Oh, no.
And he continues to look around on the ground for the grade chip. And he's like, if I find the grade chip, the grade chip's in the pot. And so... So it moves on, and a player, the overwhelming chip sack at the table, chip leader at the table, calls. He's like, I call, and I don't care whether he has another 5,000 or not, I call him that as well. So folds back around, so these guys are heads up right now, right? So you got the chip leader, who's all in. You got this guy that's still looking for his chip. You know, he's like 10 feet from the table, but he's all in, you know, on the ground, looking for his chip. So the dealer runs out the cards, and Mr. Missing Grade Chip loses. So he's eliminated from the tournament, right?
And he gives up looking for his chip.
Well, no, so he keeps looking, but, you know, it doesn't matter, because he doesn't have it. So then we got a couple people, like, hey, if he finds a chip, is he back in? And then there's this little, you know, side discussion going on. And then, before the final river card came out, the chip leader, said, half-joking, but to get it on the record, he's like, you know, if I win this hand, and you find that great chip, I believe I'm entitled to it. So we go about two more hands, and finally, two tables over finds this great chip. It must have, like, flipped off the table and rolled like it's never rolled in its life.
Jeez.
So they find the chip, and they bring it over, and the guy that beat the guy in the hand, right, says, that's mine, give it to me. And so they give it to him. And no one's putting up a fuss at this point because I think, in fairness, we all think that he should have gotten the chip, right?
Yeah.
But then the tournament director comes over and has to talk about it and think about it, and eventually they decide that he is awarded the chip. Never seen anything like this in my life.
Man. How is that a mini call to four? That didn't seem mini at all. That seemed elongated. But, wow, that's pretty bizarre. And the fact that he actually gets dealt a hand while he's looking for a chip and gets a hand worthy of all-in and gets called by someone who can cover his all-in and he finds a chip. I mean, you know, if I got knocked out of a tournament, I'd be like, see you later. Go find the chip if you want it, too. That's really bizarre.
And apparently he must have been jawing with this player later on, and I wasn't really paying attention. And this other player was really nice, and he's like, you know, hey, if I... like, cash, I'll give you a 5% of whatever they're negotiating. I don't even know why. I mean,
why?
Matter. Yeah. You know, I mean, he beat him fair and square, and then he got the chip. And really, the guy that won the hand, he really didn't care. I mean, he was chip leader at that point. I mean, obviously, you want every chip you're entitled to, and a 5,000 unit chip in that particular tournament is nothing to sneeze at. It's not like it's a, you know, a quarter chip, you know.
Right, right.
But at the same time, he wasn't trying to make a big deal. I think he realized, too, it's a 40-hour tournament. Come on. So, but that's what I'm wondering is, obviously, if this was a major tournament series, right? I think this whole thing would have played out differently.
Yeah, I think so. I think they would have, they might have. I don't know what they would have done, to be honest. I think they would have stopped the action and made sure this guy didn't sit down until he had all of his chips, or they did whatever they had to do to make sure he found his chip first, or whatever it is. And if they did deal him in, then they would make that hand dead because the guy's not sitting with his full stack or something. I mean, obviously you go back to rule one and you do what's fair to the game. This guy needs to have, people need to know what they're up against. I might call if I knew he had $5,000 more, but I'm not gonna if he has $5,000 more because it's too much for me. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of reasons to just stop that hand and make it dead and say, all right, let's stop the clock for a minute and find this guy's stupid chip.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I think in a bigger series, I think at this point, as uncomfortable as it would be for the thousands of other people in the tournament, or hundreds or whatever, if you're going to go on the scavenger hunt for this chip, I think you got to stop the clock, right?
Yeah, I mean, when...
Because you can't punish the other 8-9 people at this table.
Right.
While you're looking, you know, for the Easter egg, you know, somewhere in the green field of the poker room there.
Obviously, my situation was a little different, but the World Series, when the guy took my stack at dinner break,
yep.
And they held up the entire tournament to make sure that they looked at the eye in the sky and how many chips I had, because it wouldn't be fair to the people at the table, at my table, to sit there and wait 30 minutes. So they had to hold a tournament for like 15, 20 minutes. So that's sort of the same, kind of the same thing, but not necessarily. And yeah, I would definitely stop the clock and say, all right, guys, hang on a second. We got to take care of something. And then get everybody on their knees to find this guy's chip. Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of things lined up that it wasn't that big a deal. But, I mean, you know, if you think about it, if, you know, what if I woke up with, not me, but another player that wasn't the chip leader, that had chips that may not have covered this guy, woke up with aces. I mean, obviously, you're going to go all in. Or maybe I should have aces. That's a ridiculous one, because you would go in there. But maybe a hand where you would think about calling.
Like ace-king.
Yeah, that's a good one. Exactly. But you don't know what you're up against.
Yep. And then let's say the guy with 5,000 only has you covered by 4,000, and then you win, and now he's sitting there with no chip in front of him, but you keep dealing him in. He says, oh, no, I'm,
that's right,
I'm 4,000 behind. They got to keep running tabs until they find a chip, you know. They should have just stopped the clock, man. That was a nightmare waiting to happen.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I guess the point I'm bringing up, too, is it's a $40 tournament in a local room. I mean, there's half of me that says, you know, everything should be done by the book in every tournament, no matter where. And certainly, I think we spent a lot of time on this show talking about these home game problems that could be resolved if things were done that way. But there's another part of me that says, hey, it's a $40 tournament. Everybody seemed to know each other. We're having fun. I think everybody had an expectation at that table that whatever happened would be taken care of in a proper manner later on, even though the most proper manner would be to just stop it and figure it out at that point. So, I mean, at the end, I don't think I'm upset or anybody else is upset, but it just happened to be that it played out in a way that really didn't lend anybody to being upset about it.
It's pretty hilarious, too, that it ends up, like, two tables away. It's like, why did that chip... And how does, like, a field of players not see this 5,000 chip rolling on the floor and pick it up?
Yeah, well, I think it went under the other table, and, you know, it took a while for the commotion to finally get to that other table, or them to start looking for the chip as well, too. And actually, a couple I heard very murmured. I mean, not that they were mumbling, but I just couldn't hear from them because it's, you know, a noisy room. But I think once they figured out what was going on, I think there was some concern from that other table. Hey, you know, we're just going to find this chip and put it back in play.
And just give it to this guy who said it's his? How do you know it's not players
exactly.
too? You know?
And I think that's when the tournament director came over and pulled that player aside and asked him, you know, how it went down. Didn't actually ask the dealer, which I thought was kind of odd. But yeah, I mean, I guess in other cases, hey, once that, I mean, I don't think there's necessarily a rule that if the chip hits the ground, it's out of play. But if it hits the ground and it's out of play for three or four hands, maybe it's out of play? I don't know.
Bizarre. Absolutely bizarre.
Because then, I mean, now you're setting up a little angle. Hey, look at that. Oh, here's that chip I found. Sorry.
Oh, man, can you imagine that nightmare? Oh, well, you were all in four hands ago. That was 5,000 chips, and so now we got divided among these three guys, and oh, man. Well, that was the longest call-the-floor, not call-the-floor, I think, in history. We should probably ask Jody about that anyway, just to see how much longer we can make it.
Yes, absolutely. We'll do part two next week.
Well, speaking of a long time, I think we've had this item probably for 4.5 years. Since Parks has only been open for about 2.5-3 years, that's pretty amazing. But Michael Cantor, one of our long-time listeners, says he played in Mincash in a tournament at Parks. Great room, great staff, you know, big sack of Annie up, the chicken table, which we always like. So he says he, of course, got a copy of the magazine with him to sit down at his first table. It wasn't full, so he put the issue on an empty seat to his left. relatively young guy sat down on the other side of the empty seat and picked up the magazine. After looking at the cover, he actually scoffed and said, "What is this crap?" or something like that. I almost said, "Do you know who publishes that magazine?" but I held it in. So he's in late position when the young scoffer raises 3X. We get another caller, and it comes to me with pocket sevens. I call. Flop is 237, and he bets 2K. I raise to 5K, and he instantly goes all in, which I am more than happy to call. He says, "Do you have aces?" and turns over king-king. And, of course, he's the first person I bust out of the tournament. He's mumbling, "Calling 1,200 with sevens?" as he leaves. If I had been a quicker thinker, or a quick thinker, or more obnoxious, I would have given him the magazine and said, "Maybe you should read some of the strategy columns in here," but I was just happy counting my chips. Anyway, I hope he learned his lesson not to mess with Ante Up.
Yeah, don't mess with us.
Don't mess with us, man.
Well, don't mess with Chris, at least.
Yeah, because I'm the...
Because you'll say, "Hey, do you know who I am?"
I'm the most annoying player at the table. And you don't want to mess with me. Actually, I think, you know, I could actually have that retired status, like emeritus or whatever, where you can find other now and more annoying players and just keep me in that hall of fame of annoying players. So you don't have to, you know, the person who wins the award every year, they retire it and say, "Okay, we're going to let other people win the award." So, but, yeah, interesting that, you know, you never know what kind of magazine is going to turn a poker player on or off, you know.
Yep,
you never know what they're going to want from their magazine, so. But thanks for the support and the shout out. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and I hope that karma from 2005 is continuing these today, Mike. And, the next time you write us, we'll try to get it in within the decade.
He's probably already stopped listening to the show and then refound the show again, and then now he's listening again, saying, "Wow, they're still talking about me all this time later. Jeez." That was an old letter, but hey, what are you going to do? We try to get everything in that we can. We have a hotline, you know.
Oh, good.
No, go ahead. I'm just going to say we have a hotline, 813-448-1120. Always happy when people call it. And when they leave us a cool message and we use it, we give them something really cool. This comes from Craig Patrick, and he wants an addendum to a show that we might be doing pretty soon.
Why don't you do a show? Somebody was just asking about names that people use in hands, such as flatting and all that. Why don't you combine it with a show that talks about different poker games that people play in their home games, like 357, Jacks Are Better, any different kind of card games that they play, just to see what's out there and give a slight explanation of what each game is. I think it'd be a fun show. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm normally the accommodating part of the team here, I believe, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
But I gotta say, I'm not entirely sure I want to go down this road.
Especially when he's bringing up games I didn't even know. What, 357, or what did he say?
Yeah, I mean, and it's a tough, it's a pothole-laden road here that I'm going to be driving here to get to the point where I'm not going to go down the other road. Because, you know, we do spend a lot of time bringing up new games for our listeners on the show, right? Certainly, Six Card Hold'em is not something that will ever be played anywhere. But it's a fantastic game.
Enjoy. Yeah, yeah.
And I know people like to play at home games and like to play some of this stuff that a lot of us used to play or some still play. I don't know how valuable it is to bring it up on the show and try to explain, here's how you play Night Baseball.
I loved that game as a kid.
Of course. I mean, it's fun. I'm not not dissing at all. People want to play them the home game, that's great. But I kind of like want to keep our show on games that are at least close to what you'll play in a casino.
Yeah.
Or if not, really, really good variations of it, like Six Card Hold'em.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair. I don't disagree with that. I mean,
that being said, though, we have a fantastic forum. I don't know if people know this. AntiUpMagazine.com/forum. And that would be a perfect discussion thread to start there, wouldn't it?
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm always surprised when I hear the games that people... You know, I used to have a video game years ago on my old Mac. I think it was like iPoker or something. And they had like every game you could think of. I mean, literally every game you could think of and every variation on there. And that was kind of cool to see what the games were and maybe try to figure out the strategies, but really, you know, we try to keep our show to hey, here are the the games that people consider legitimate or whatever you want to call them. But that's not to say, it depends on what you want out of your home game, so that's fine. But what we want out of our show is basically, you know, real poker.
Real poker.
You know what I mean.
All right, well, definitely, Craig, we suggest you go to the forum and post that. I think that would be a fun thread to read, even though we're all going to be hoity-toity and not doing it on the show. But for calling in, we're going to send you a great thing that you can play with your night baseball game, a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. Ask about the Anti-Up logo version, of course, and use code Anti-Up for free shipping. Did you ever play a night baseball tournament when you were getting started?
Not tournaments, but I mean, we used to play cash for that, though. I mean, I never played tournaments, but I played cash for them. And yeah, I played all those games. Night baseball, roll your own, and all that stuff. And here we are talking about it. So we weren't going to, but... I like those games. They're fun. It's always interesting.
Sevens and nines, wild.
Well, what I like about the baseball is that people have different variations on it. Like, they'll say you can buy a card for when you get a four showing. Some say you just get the free card. You know what I mean? Right. Some don't play it at all. So there are variations, you know, and it's just how wild you want your game to be.
Yeah, it's like landing on a free parking in Monopoly and getting all the
fine. All that money. Yeah, exactly.
Keeps that game going on forever.
We got an interesting mailbag this week, an anonymous one, which isn't surprising considering the content.
Well, the letter writer, in full disclosure, was not anonymous, but I am not attempting to embarrass this particular person.
Oh, I forgot about that. I thought
making them anonymous, just in case other people were having this question.
I thought they asked to be anonymous. Okay, so, says, I am one of the victims of the PokerStars Ponzi scheme. I played online for about 2.5 years, losing almost $8,000. In all those years, I did receive one winning check for about $650. How do I now cash in on getting my money back from the cheaters?
Well, I wrote back to Anonymous and let he or she know that there was not a PokerStars Ponzi scheme. In my opinion, there wasn't even a Full Tilt Ponzi scheme.
Right.
But I've got to think that they are thinking of Full Tilt. So you have to answer it one of two ways, I guess. If they meant to say Full Tilt, then if you are outside the United States, you've already got your money back. And if you're inside the United States, within 27 years, the government probably will give you your money back. And if you were on Stars, then it wasn't a Ponzi scheme, and you already got your money back, regardless of where you live. But really, it sounds like to me that this is just a player that just lost a ton of money, right?
Right, and thinks that he's cheated out of it.
So it's not the money that's in his or her account, it's he just wants, hey, I want my money back that I wagered.
Right, exactly.
And that ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, no, that's how I read it exactly. I read it as that he lost money, and now he's thinking that he was being cheated all that time, and now he's getting his money back. So they just didn't understand the news stories and understand what was going on, and just assumed that because the owners of Full Tilt were stealing money, and according to the DOJ, that he was being cheated of that money, but that's not what it means. That's how I took it, that he just was thinking that he was being cheated out of the money he lost, and... You know, people were seeing his whole cards or something like that along those lines. It's too bad, though. I mean, it's weird. And then he calls the $650 a winning check. Yeah. You know, like I guess that's the money he won, but it just sounds like it's funny, like it's a, you know, he won a tournament or something for that, but too bad. That's too bad.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess it's a good time to remind folks that, you know, if you lose a poker, you lose a poker.
Yeah. unless you want to be in Hollywood and sue the home game guys who ran the game, get your money back.
But the other thing too is that the online poker is still the Wild Wild West. We're getting closer in some states to it being less Wild West, but you know, again, if you want to play on that, stuff's gonna happen. It shouldn't happen, but it's gonna happen.
Yep.
Buyer beware.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Buyer beware.
All right, Anonymous, if you are listening, we'll be happy to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app from Apple Products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes Store.
And the good news is you can't wager money while you're playing it. I mean, you could do it with somebody if you want to and promise to pay them or get paid, but that's just a regular game, so... Yeah. Well, we got some feedback, too, from Ken Engstrock this week. He says that he was chugging through a backlog of podcasts and was surprised we scraped the bottom of the barrel for Hand of the Week on the October 26th episode with a hand he played about a year and a half ago. It was Pocket Jacks against a bleary-eyed European. Hopefully the barrel has filled back up. That particular hand did end without knowing what the other guy had since I folded my jacks. I noticed in an episode from a couple of weeks later that someone sent in a message about being unsatisfied when Hands of the Week or O'Malley's moves end without knowing what the opponent had. I would agree it makes for a less satisfying story, but it is also a good example of being results-oriented. For the purposes of determining the optimal move, discussions really need to focus on our opponent's range, and then how our hand does against that range. Knowing what our opponent actually had can only help us in determining if we correctly or incorrectly put that particular hand in our opponent's range. Interesting.
Yeah, I like this point. Again, I'm on the kind of the side where I don't necessarily need to know what the other guy had. I find value in this discussion without it. Again, I think he said it is perfect, that it's more satisfying when you know. But I certainly see a lot of benefit in dissecting hands where we don't know. But this is a better way of putting it than I had. You're looking at the wrong metric, I guess.
No, I agree. And I think I've even said on the show before, too, that's poker. Sometimes you don't get to know what, you know what I mean, in real life. And, you know, in this situation, I think we're just feeling the pain of the other player by not knowing and still discussing the hand, so.
Excellent. Well, always nice when our listeners call, write in to make it a little, clarify it for us.
Absolutely. And Ken's been a listener for a long time, too. We've got a long time listener show today, so it seems like.
Yes. Veterans Day. All right, we got a reminder that we are, as suggested by one of our fans, we'll be doing a show soon on quote unquote new terms prevalent in poker that perhaps not all of our audience understands, such as flat, jam, etc. Let us know what terms you think many players might need to find. Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call the hotline at 813-448-1120 or post in our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum or go on our Facebook page. We've already got a gajillion of them.
Yeah.
It's funny. Sometimes we do these solicitations, you know, like, hey, do your best Phil Hellmuth impression. Crickets. Hey, what are some terms that that you might not understand? Foldy buff. Just never know, right?
It's incredible. Every once in a while, I think, all right, do we have any more listeners? I mean,
is anybody listening?
Why are we doing this show, man? And then you put something out there like that, and all of a sudden it's like inundated, and you're like, oh, phew, they're out there. They like us. They really like us. Okay, speaking of liking us, the Antiup Poker Tour, Running Aces Harness Park near Minneapolis is going to host the Antiup Midwest Championship, an Antiup Poker Tour Series, April 11th to the 21st. A lot of buzz for this one. People already posing with the Antiup standee. Got to love that. Getting excited about it. For more information, you can go to antiupmagazine.com/runningaces. And, of course, there's more details on all of our AUPT events at antiuppokertour.com.
And, of course, our Antiup Poker Tour World Championship is going to be at the Hard Rock Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic, which is now accepting bookings for that event July 28th to August 3rd at that luxurious all-inclusive resort. 14 tournaments with buy-ins as low as 115 buckaroos, with the winner of the $1,100 main event appearing on the cover of Antiup Magazine, hopefully with a drink in their hand. Great all-inclusive room rates for adults and children. We'll make this a great poker and or family vacation this year. More information can be found at antiupmagazine.com/worldchampionship. Including how you can win your way there at Dover Downs and Thunder Valley Casino Resort, and hopefully more places coming very soon.
Walt Strakowski, our 2010 Player of the Year and a single table specialist, is going to be our pro on our May 20th Antiup Poker Cruise out of Miami, which will spotlight Sit and Goes. Rates are guaranteed through March 4th, and of course we're also sailing out of New York and Tampa this year. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs and Naples Fort Myers Greyhound Track at AntiupCruises.com. AnnieUp.com. All right, got some news this week. What happened on the AnnieUp news desk?
3 weeks before the Horseshoe Cincinnati opens in Ohio, the Associated Press reports that the redevelopment of the casino site itself has already reduced crime 34%, the largest one-year drop in the area's history.
Wow. I mean, don't we always get the Gamblers Anonymous stuff and all those things and the 188 Admitted stuff saying don't open up more casinos because it's going to increase the crime?
Yeah, those whores are going to be coming in turning tricks. Nothing but pickpockets.
You trick turner, get off my streets. But really, and this is reduced crime 34%. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's one of these, as I like to say, because I like to be very fair, one of these kind of like spin it how you want to statistics.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what the Gamblers Anonymous and other critics are upset about is not when the casino's being built, it's when it's actually open and there's money there. So we'll see what happens then. But I think it is a good feel-good story that, I mean, it's very tough to do redevelopment in blighted areas in any of our areas, and a casino company has the kind of money to do it if you let a casino company come in. And we've seen already, I mean, it's a staggering drop in an area that seems to have, I wouldn't, crime-ridden is probably a little strong, but just redeveloping the area with a casino has helped, in a sense.
It's remarkable. Well, we'll see what happens when it opens, but still, I mean, that's great news. And more somber news, Jerry Buss, the personal owner of the Los Angeles Lakers and a well-known high-limit poker player, died this week at the age of 80. And I saw that the World Series was saying that they might name the 7-card stud championship after him this year if the family okays it.
Well, yeah, I thought that was the case, but it ends up it was a TMZ report, which, you know, I believe what a Bernie Madoff tells me more than I believe anything on TMZ. But the story said a family source was going to ask the World Series, I think, to rename it.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around. I thought they were going to approach the family.
Yeah. Very big difference about it.
Oh, okay.
Well, he
was stud player. He loved stud. Yeah, I talked about it a little bit on Fifth Street Radio this week about, you know, how sad it was. And you know, you used to see him on High Stakes Poker when that was on TV. Obviously, I didn't know the guy, but he seemed like a really, really nice guy.
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, I didn't read the stories. I've been traveling, obviously, but the talk at the poker table this week was that he started out really poor in Wyoming or something and, you know, made his own fortune, which is always nice to hear. If that's true, I didn't look it up. But we'll just give you all kinds of random rumors and stuff today.
I know we're ticking off somebody out there. They always say, do your research. But, you know, we go off on tangents and whatever.
Yeah, just like me saying Warren Buffett drives a pickup truck.
That's
you know?
Right.
but here's the thing. Jerry Buss, I'm not a... I'm not a huge basketball fan. You know, I watch it occasionally, but I'm certainly not a fan. So Jerry is one of these guys that I know almost exclusively from poker, which I think is kind of interesting. The owner of the Lakers, and that, but I mean, I'm not stupid about that. But in terms of seeing him or hearing him talk or anything, it's always been at the poker table for me, you know, on TV. I've never actually seen him interviewed. I never saw him interviewed as part of the Lakers ever, which is I just find that kind of interesting.
That's
good. That there's people like this that just depends on your particular interest and their particular interest, how you know them.
Yeah, that's weird. I mean, you know, because you like sports, I'm figuring that you have ESPN on in the background once in a while or something when you're doing, you know, your football or your fantasy football or anything like that, and you just might hear Jerry Buss's name thrown around a lot in there, but. That's how I knew him. Before I knew him first as the Laker guy, and then didn't even know he played poker until I saw him on High Stakes. It is sad, and I know that a lot of poker players will miss him.
And finally, the city of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, will auction off thousands of Wild West artifacts. Not from the Wild West online. Those would be in a different auction. Right? One of them is Wyatt Earp's poker table. All this will be to raise money for the cash-strapped city. The items were collected by a previous mayor who had hoped to open a Western museum in the city.
Huh.
So So the way I understand it, there's a mayor and he just had a hair up his rear. Hey, let's collect a bunch of Wild West stuff and open a museum in Pennsylvania. Because, you know, when people want to go see Wild West stuff, they want to come to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
That is so weird. I mean, how does that even happen? He must have, like, some connection.
Driving through Harrisburg. You know what? I hope there's a Wild West Museum somebody nearby.
Where is Harrisburg? Is that in West Pennsylvania or is that in East Pennsylvania?
It's closer to the eastern. It's
jeez. I mean, if it was, like, you know, near Pittsburgh or something, I could say, hey, we live in Philly. Let's go out west and see the waiter table, you know, or something. But if you're, like, almost not even on the eastern side of the country, it's just bizarre. Wow. So what do you think that poker table will fetch?
I don't know. I mean, again, I mean, it's one of these things where you got to believe it's Wyatt Earp's poker table, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think they had something that proved it or whatever. But and I could be wrong. This thing might have already been auctioned off. But if not, I mean, there is a poker room there in Harrisburg, Hollywood Penn National. If I was them, I would buy that. You know, keep it right there.
Yeah, yeah.
This poker table was never played on by Wyatt Earp in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, but you don't know that. It's part of Harrisburg's lore now. And if Wyatt Earp was still alive and he came to Harrisburg, he might have played poker on this table. You could really spin it that way, I think.
Oh, man. Well, you may never figure out if it's Wyatt Earp's poker table, but you might be able to figure out a new Mally's move here. So here we go. Here's part one, and we'll get back to it next week.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are still at that PLO game, but we've been card dead for hours. If you remember, early in the night, we won a huge pot that got our stack up to over 900. We've slipped quite a bit, and we now sit with 580. Once again, we find ourselves under the gun with another decent starting hand. Ace of spades, jack of diamonds, 10 of spades, 10 of hearts. A suited ace with a bigger pair, this is worth a raise. We make it $7 to go, and are disgusted with what follows. The plus one calls, MPs one and two call, the cutoff folds, hijack calls, button calls, small blind folds, big blind calls. UGH. Ugh. That's seven players going to the flop and almost $50 in the pot. But the flop is another thing of beauty. King of spades, eight of spades, three of spades. The big blind checks, and we're going to lay a little trap here. With so many people to act behind us, we're bound to get a bet in, and our intention is to check raise. We check. The plus one checks, MPs one and two check, hijack checks, and the button checks. Again, UGH! Exclamation mark. To make matters worse, the turn is the eight of clubs. And once again, the big blind checks to us. There's about $50 in the pot, and we make it $30 to go. The MP1 calls, the villain from last week. He rebought after we sucked out on him for $200, worked that up to $500, and then lost another two on another suckout. He currently has $300. Fortunately, everyone else gets out of the way. The river is the nine of spades. There's just over $100 in the pot, and we're going to check. Since it's pot limit, that's all he can bet. If we bet, say, 75, he can really take us for quite a bit of money if he's coolered us here. Just as we suspected, he pots it. 106 to be exact. Is he on tilt? Can we call? Or should we just move on to the next hand? What are we going to do?
Literally, Chris, after we finished recording last week's show, I go to check my email. Boom! World Series schedule announced.
Isn't that happen every year to us?
It does. Isn't it great timing?
It's every year.
They know when we record our show, and they should send it out to get it on in time on it.
You know, the world apparently does not revolve around us.
Despite what, Michael Cantor thinks with, the magazine of parks. But the World Series Poker, released the schedule for this year's event and details on some interesting stuff. So today we'll break it down and see what's new. And let me just run through a couple of real quick things. And then there's a bunch of different events. I think we go one by one on some of these events and just kind of give some thoughts. I got some interesting ideas, and I know you do too.
Yeah.
But in general, the series will run out May 29th to July 15th this year. The main event will be July 6th to July 15th, resuming on November 4th and 5th. So the November 9 again.
It's back.
62 bracelets will be handed out this year. That's one more than last year. But a record 480 tables will fill all of those ballrooms at the Rio in Las Vegas. And as usual, special room rates at all Caesars Entertainment properties in Las Vegas. But this year, $59 weekday rates at the Rio. That would be hard to turn down, I think.
Maybe the quad still has $7 a night.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the Rio's at $59 now. The quad should be, like, giving you money.
Yeah, you're like, pay you to stay here.
and here, we'll pay you, and then we might even tell you how to turn the TV on.
I forgot all about that. Oh, jeez.
Never. All right, so some of the events here. Every weekend in June will be $1,000 and/or $1,500 events, designed specifically for weekend warriors. And I really like that they do this. I mean, obviously, it's smart business. You know, they know they're going to get some people that are going to just come for a long weekend, and they want to get those lower buy-ins so folks get a shot at their bracelet and then be able to get home and not get fired from their job. But they really put a lot of thought into doing those on the weekends.
Do you think that I noticed that there were 7 $1,000 events that are open events? Do you think that's enough? That's only. I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, 62 events. Stop the madness, okay? I mean, one more than last year. Every year they're going to keep adding one or two before there's so many. Let's just make it year round. Here's how you know, and you're going to talk about it in a little while. Here's how you know there are too many events right now. Event 6, the million-dollar maker, or millionaire maker, whatever that we're going to call it, that's just 2 days into the tournament. They've already played 6 events.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, what's next? Bracelets for satellites, it goes? I mean, come on. But really, that's like it's about 10% of the field, a little more of the events are for $1,000. I think there should be more.
What's kind of fascinating to me is, again, I've been on the road quite a while now talking to managers, and particularly about the glut of tournaments, which we keep talking about. But you look at the buy-ins and how the buy-ins are ratcheting down. I mean, remember when we first got into this business, it was like everything was like a $10,000 buy-in for the main events, right? Now there's very few of those anywhere. I mean, everything's came down to like $3,500. Even $3,500 is a big main event now.
Yeah.
You know, 2,500, and then a lot of them are 1,100, including so far all of our Antioch Poker Tour events, 1,100. And to me, that still seems kind of high. I mean, I don't go playing $1,100 events on a regular basis or ever. So it's funny to me that the cheapest tournament in the World Series is 1,000. And they really didn't have any of these, a couple years ago, they got rid of 1,000, they were just 1,500. Now they're coming back to 1,000. I almost wonder, to your point, whether they should be adding some $500 bracelet events.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. And you know what? You start to get, then they'll get into the whole argument of the validity of the bracelet. You know, right. Oh, I'll have a $40 30-player turbo for a bracelet. Eventually they're going to get to that point where they got to stop reducing it. But really, I mean, only 7 events are $1,000? I mean, to me, it just, I don't know. It just seems like if you're trying to, you know, help out the everyday player or the weekend warrior at some point, maybe you're not. Maybe you don't care about that. I don't know. I do like the way they did it on the weekend, so you can get in there and get out, get your bracelet and get out kind of thing. But maybe they do some 500. I know they have that employees one is 500, so what's the difference? Yeah. You know?
Well, yeah, and again, I'm not trying to tell Caesars Entertainment how to run their tournament because they, I mean, I do need to say this every year. I think this is just a mammoth undertaking, and for any amount of criticism they get, They should get an equal amount of praise for being able to put together something like this every year with all the complaints from little pissants like us. But I guess what I would suggest, I mean, what I'm thinking about is, you know, some of the circuit events, they kick off with these 500 or 350 or something like that tournaments, and they put some big guarantees, $1 million, $2 million on them, stuff like that. You know, we just got back from Palm Beach Kennel Club, and they had 2,400 people in for a $1 million guaranteed tournament that was, I think, 500.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the new trend now, because people say, you know, I can afford 500 to play for $1 million prize pool. And I think they could get away. I would think probably the thing that they wouldn't do is it just they get so many people for even these $1,000 events that if you made it 500, I can imagine the amount of people coming, right?
Yeah.
But they run a bunch of non-bracelet events every night, so why not just take a week and do like 7 flights of one of these things for
to
500?
Get, yeah, to get the $1 million guarantee.
Yeah, just cancel the other tournaments that particular week and just get a really huge, massive deal. I mean, I think that's going to be the next thing that really gets people buzzing. I mean, they got some other interesting things here that we'll talk about, but I think in terms of true buzz, you know, adding a $500 event with, you know, multiple day one flights with a big guarantee is really going to be the next thing I think that gets people buzzing at the World Series, if they go that route.
Yeah, and I think the Millionaire Maker might be a good gauge for them. If they get a $3 million prize pool, you know what I mean, for $1,500 buy-in, then they can, you know, easily get $1 million for a $500 buy-in, you know, if they had, like you said, a week-long of flights or whatever.
Right.
Do you remember how many flights Palm Beach had for theirs? It was
four.
Four or five. Wrong. So, I mean, that's, you know, and I'm sure that during the year they probably did a lot of high hands where they gave away seats and stuff, but, you know, and it's, but that's just little Palm Beach down in Florida. This is the mecca for the month of, you know, summer or whatever. So I think they could do it. I think they really could do it. That's a real interesting idea you got there. Let's call them up.
Yeah, let's do it. all right, well, you did mention Event 6, which is going to be a $1,500 buy-in with the first place prize of $1 million, and real quickly, Event 3 will be a single rebuy event. But Event 6, they are calling the Millionaire Maker, and they are making a first-place prize of at least $1 million. I guess it could be more, but probably not. I think this is an interesting trend as well, too. I mean, at Palm Beach this year, but last year we had a really good conversation about when they did their big... last year they had $2,700, I think, for it. And first place was like something like $180,000 or something. I think it was right around the same time this year too,
right.
And there was some discussion, you know, hey, is that a big enough first prize? You know, are people playing just for the guaranteed prize pool, or are they playing for something that they can say, hey, I just made bank on this tournament? And I'm not sneezing at $180,000, don't get me wrong, for a $500 buy-in tournament, but I think some people were wondering, you know, hey, maybe that first prize should be $500,000 or something bigger. I mean, really front load it for that kind of event, and that's obviously what they're doing here. I mean, it's a very front-loaded event. You know, $1 million for a $1,500 buy-in, that's a nice little payday.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you'll need about 700 players to even get $1 million, right? How much? Close to a little more than that, I guess. No, about that, right? So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, just to get to the million, yeah. So, I mean, I like the idea. It's kind of cool to name it that, Millionaire Maker.
I mean, think about this, too. I mean, last year, I could be wrong on this, but the main event, what you had to... I'm not even sure the whole November 9 made $1 million, right?
Yeah, I don't think the ninth place did.
And so here's a tournament where you can make $1 million, where you can make more than ninth place in the main event. That's kind
of
cool.
Yeah, and for, what, 1.5 of the price or whatever, so... I'm not good with numbers.
But I also wonder, I mean, and I don't... I wonder if this thing could get chopped. I mean, that's the last thing you'd want is to have it chopped if you really want to have a millionaire that you can put on a poster, right?
Yeah.
But if they don't let you chop, then I think that's a consideration in playing, knowing that, you know, almost all the money's going to go to one guy or a gal.
Can they keep you from chopping? I mean, you can just go outside and chop.
I guess, but I mean, you're talking lots of money here. I don't know if I really want to go out to the Rio parking lot in that 120-degree heat and call my accountant to come over and count down a big stacks, you know.
Wow.
All right, well, event 34, skipping all the way to event 34, will be the World Series first turbo event, $1,000 buy-in. Levels will be 30 minutes and then 40 minutes before finally settling in at the normal 60-minute level.
Boy, I would love to play a turbo that's 60-minute levels. Turbo.
30, even 30-minute levels. I mean, wow. There's not a lot of tournaments I've played where you have 30-minute levels, so.
That's like tortoise speed to me. That's not turbo at all.
But what I think is interesting about this is not that they're doing a turbo or that we're laughing at what they consider a turbo, but I think one of the things these weekend warriors, and I assume this is going to be on a weekend, I didn't look at the schedule, but I think one of the problems with the series for weekend warriors is they're not used to playing a long level tournament.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. I don't think I've ever played a 60-minute level tournament ever in my life. I don't think the World Series event I played was 60 minutes at that time. Maybe it was.
It's on a Wednesday, by the way.
I was on a Wednesday?
Yeah.
Okay. But I think that's something that I don't think players really take into account. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to go out and play in the World Series. I'm going to, you know, put $1,000 down and chase history. And then you get out there, and 2 hours in, you're like, geez, I'm still playing 5,100? So, I mean, in a lot of ways, I think it might be a better event for some of those players that haven't played the longer events now. I mean, at least the ADD players out there that their mind wanders. I mean, you get get twice as many levels there for a while, at least.
No, that's true. I mean, again, that's just, to me, that's an eternity. So I love long buy. I mean, long levels. So, God, you're right. It's a good idea to, if you're going to play, choose an event. You know what, and you don't get to play a lot of regular tournaments like this, that's a good idea to go into.
All right, event 47 will be the One Drop High Roller. You know, last year they had the $1 million excuse me, tournament. They're going to skip that this year, bring it back next year. But this year, it will be a $111,111 buy-in. I'm really tempted, if I had that much, which you know I do somewhere, to go buy in all ones. Just to stick it to them. You're getting cute with all these ones. Well, here you go. Here's a bunch of ones. So anyhow, about $1,100 buy-in, and the World Series is donating all the house fees for that event to that One Drop charity.
So what are the house fees for that event? Is it 1,000?
The 3% they take out of all the tournaments. So
the reason why I ask is because we're going to talk about the little one, and that is 1,111, and they're taking 111 out of that. I want to make sure they weren't taking 11,111 out of the $100,000 buy-in for the charity fee and everything. But okay, so it's just their fees that are being donated.
Right, exactly.
Very cool.
And we'll skip back. We'll go back to the ladies in a minute. But since we brought up event 58, we'll be the little one for the one drop, $1,111 with unlimited re-entries for the first four levels. $111 of that will go to the charity as well. So $1,000 for the prize pool. And they made a big deal about this earlier about unlimited re-entries and really trying to get the prize pool up. And we talked about it before. We'll see. You know, hope they do. It'd be kind of cool, but I don't know how many people are going to keep peeling off $1,111.
Yeah, because the re-entry is the full price, so they get more money for the charity. So $111, they're going to need a lot of people to enter to even make any decent money for the one drop.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, you brought up the ladies' championship, and we talked about this. We talked about all this stuff on Fifth Street Radio, but the ladies' championship got an interesting twist this year to try to dissuade men from entering. $1,000 buy-in for the women, $10,000 for the men. And what it is the women's buy-in is $10,000 with a $9,000, rebate or whatever you want to call it.
But, discount.
Discount. But I just had to wonder, is that legal? Legal?
I got a lot of thoughts about this. I mean, one, I mean, I think this is the, I assume, the legal way around this, because in the past, obviously, you know, people complain about this, and I think they determined that they couldn't bar a man from playing in any event, so they had to let him play. So they must have gone through legal and figured out, well, you know what, let's just raise the buy-in and then give somebody else a discount. Now, I know in Florida, because I was talking to a manager this week, not necessarily about this, but just about buy-ins in general, that you can't have two different buy-in levels for people. So in Florida, it's probably not going to fly. But I you know, Caesars has got more lawyers than any other gaming company in the world, so I got to think they've looked at this over and figured out they could do it.
I what I compared it to on the show when I talked with Mark was, you know, bars have those ladies drink free because they want to get as much clientele through the doors, and if they know ladies are going to be there, then men will show up. So ladies are drinking free, but guys aren't. And I guess that's legal, although you're allowed to give away things. If you're charging a price, I don't know if it's fair to use gender to determine the price. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, but you do it with age, you know, you senior discounts and things.
So, yeah, I guess mean, so.
I'm sure there's a whole body of legal work devoted to it. But, you know, a couple things I think are interesting about this is... I hate to pick on poker players, but every once in a while I like to give them a little reality thing. And this is what we see with poker players all the time. You got managers and tournament directors that are trying to listen to their players and give the players exactly what they want. They'll give them the entire mile, and then players will want one more inch.
Yeah.
So what I saw as soon as this was announced was a bunch of people on Facebook and Twitter going, hey, does that mean I get it? We start with 30,000 units because it's triple the buy-in? And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Are you serious? And unfortunately, people were. So they had to actually send out a revised press release saying, hey, no, you don't get 30,000 for this. And there are a couple other events where you don't get the triple. But, you know, come on, let's just be happy that they figured out a way to keep the men out.
Yeah.
And not now bitch about not getting 30,000 units for your $1,000 buy-in tournament. I mean, can we get to that point at some point where we just thank people for making good progress and not demanding far more progress than they should give us?
You're asking for people to be rational as a whole, and that's just not going to happen.
I know. I am my little perfect utopia that I built here. My little office. I keep peering into it, waiting for me to be able to pop into it. But here's the other thing, too, I want to talk about, is I do think it's a little ridiculous that we're going to these levels to keep men out of this event. Isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with it, so...
Well, here's the thing, is, I mean, none of us want men to play the ladies' event. They're doing a ladies' event, we want the ladies to play in it. And I know some women feel, you know, uncomfortable playing with men. That's why we do a ladies' event. We can have that other discussion that we always have about ladies' events. But at the end of the day, I think these women have done a pretty good job of policing this. You know, we've both been out there. When men enter that, you know, there's people are all over Twitter with their table and seat locations. There's people railing them, cheering for them to be eliminated. I think we're doing our part right now to make men feel like the scum that they are for entering these events. Now we got to go to this point now where it's 10,000 to get them out. I mean, how much farther do we got to go?
A million.
I will also say this. I will bet $1, Mortimer, that there will be some jacknut guy that's going to put down $10,000 to enter this event. Because he knows he's going to be in every poker journalism thing ever. He's going to be all over Twitter. And that's why these guys enter. There's no reason for guys to enter this ladies' event other than that their mother just didn't hold them enough when they're kids. That's really it. I mean, you're a complete attention whore is why you do this. And now I can see somebody going, oh, they think they can keep me out for $10,000. I'm going to show them. And last year, I don't know how many men there were, but I mean, nameless, faceless at that point. But this year, I mean, I'm only putting a dollar down, Mortimer. But I would not be surprised if one did it, and I would not be surprised if a couple more did it, thinking that they're going to be the only one, and then being really pissed off.
Yeah,
some other guy putting down $10,000.
That's pretty funny. I mean, so, and why did they make it 10,000? Why? They thought that would be enough? If you wanted to insure it, make it a million. You know what I mean? Why? You know what I mean? And then you had a million to the prize pool to play in a $1,000 event. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, then Facebook would be like, wow, we get 3 million starting units.
30 million.
30 million, yes.
Let's make it $50 million. But no, but
this event's going to come back in November and finish up after the main event with no time off. It's just going to go for 7 months.
But you do make a good point that you're calling more attention to this now by doing it this way than ever before, and obviously because we're talking about it. You know, if it was just a regular ladies event, we wouldn't have said anything. And so now we're talking about it. So they're calling attention to this, and these guys are going to see all the attention that it's getting and then what they could get for it. For, you know, if there's some millionaire out there who doesn't, it's a drop in the bucket for him to do it, but he can get a ton of publicity by wearing his patch for his business or, you know, or something like that. You know, who knows? Maybe even some of the less than reputable online sites might do something crazy. You know, who knows? Yeah, you're making a good point there. I don't know what that number is or what that way is. Because, like you said, though, we're not stopping them from entering them. We are doing a good job of humiliating them. We are doing a good job of discouraging them, but we're not stopping them. And I think the women want an event to themselves, and so they're trying to help them out somehow.
But I guess that's the other point, and I'm not trying to get all of our female listeners riled up and throwing eggs at me here, but you know what? One of the great pieces of advice that my mother gave me, and I'm sure several other mothers gave their kids, life isn't fair. Mm-hmm. You know, people just are, there's just bad people in the world, that people are going to do bad things, and you just got to learn to get over it. And you know what? A couple guys entered the men's tournament, yeah, they're douchebags. They should be mocked and humiliated and tarred and feathered, but how does that ruin your enjoyment of your event? I mean, just get over it.
What happened to Deutsche Bank?
Yeah.
You're so riled up. Just get over it, Scott. Just get over it.
And I hate being this way because I really do have below crust of the earth respect for any guy that enters these tournaments. I do think that they're the biggest jerk bags in the world. So I don't want to be coming off as I'm defending them. But I also think, you know, hey, be tough for your tournament. Just say, you know what? All right. This guy's a jerk. I'm gonna felt him.
Yeah.
I mean, they continue lying on how can we keep people out? And, you know, other things in the world we need to be worried about, I think. But I'm not a woman. It's not my tournament, so I will shut up now. We'll move on. all right, so they're going to do a $5,000 buy-in, open-faced Chinese. It's a non-bracelet event, but they are evaluating it for bracelet status next year. I'm going to make a prediction here, too. I'm going to bet my other dollar, Mortimer. That this is totally going to be a bracelet event next year. People are just going to go back crazy over this thing, and they're going to make it a bracelet event, and then, you know.
And then we'll the fad will end, and it'll die out just like it did in 1994.
Exactly,
with regular
yeah.
Chinese.
Eventually, there's going to be 7 people in it 5 years from now, and they're going to be like, why did we ever do this?
Yeah. Yeah. I have to actually watch the game be played still. I still have not even attempted it, so. You know, I'm not excited about
it. Yeah. I would say, you know, from a spectator standpoint, I mean, you know, even when we go at the World Series, you know, they got the little viewing area for the final tables, and I've sat there and watched for a little bit, but I eventually get bored. You know, I just watching poker is boring. I'm sorry. I'll be honest. But watching an open face tournament, that I think I would be captivated by.
Let me ask you this: when you played, did a lot of hands get fouled?
Yes.
See, to me, that's going to kill it. For television or whatever, you know.
Well, yeah, but what they make up for it is the royalties. And I haven't looked at the structure on this and whether I assume they're doing royalties for it. Because then that adds some excitement. Because then it's the, okay, you got one card to go, you hit the flush, he wins a million chips. If he misses it, he's out of the tournament. That, you know, there's some excitement there. But yes, I know what you're getting at.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. We'll see if the royalties outweigh the foulness of the game.
I love it. All right. Well, of course, everybody can go to WSOP.com for a lot more information on the World Series. And good luck to all of the Antioch Nation planning to go out there and play and win lots of bracelets. And we'll talk about you on the show, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up. Calling me, calling me, calling me, calling me.
going above our pay grade this week, Chris.
Uh-oh.
We're playing 5-5 this week.
5-5, wow.
Assuming there's no limit. Yes, so it's a game that I have not played. I'm going to guess you have not played, right?
I have not played 5-5.
Although I guess it's 2-5, it's not that much different than
2-5. Yeah, I've played 2-5.
It's, yeah, I mean, if we're getting like 5-10 or something, it's getting crazy. But
here's a question, have you played 2-5?
I have played 2-5 once at the beautiful all-inclusive, and an all-inclusive that means everything's included, Hard Rock Punta Cana.
Okay, that's right. You were down there with Salmon played then, right? Is that true?
Yeah, when I was down there, that was the only game they had going on.
Okay.
And it played a little differently, so it's, you know, it wasn't a true... I mean, again, it depends. I mean, when you're in a room where they have a 1-2 or 1-3 and then a 2-5 and a 5-10, all those games play a little differently.
Yeah.
But if you're in a place where they always spread 2-5, you can't really call it a... I mean, it's 2-5, but I mean... You know what I'm getting at?
No, I know exactly what you're saying, because you're getting the 1-3 crowd that are sitting down, too, because they have no other choice, and the game will play totally differently. Yeah, exactly.
Slightly higher stakes than you normally play, but in a place where you have a choice, then it plays a little differently, I think.
It's like a cruise ship when you don't have the Antipolo cruise going.
Yeah.
You have to play 8-16, because that's what they put down, but the players sitting down are 8-16 players.
Exactly. Excellent. See, that's why you're on the show. That, and we need somebody to edit and post it. all right, so it comes from our new good friend, Nick. So he's playing 5-5. He has 1,200 in front of him, bought in for 500.
Worked it way up.
Worked his way up. He didn't say it, though.
That's good.
And he says the game is very deep stacked.
Okay.
We're on the button with King Jack, and I'm assuming it's off suit because he didn't give any suits. A middle position player raised to 45. And it's on us.
Wow. Well, you know, if you're a good player and you like to be in position and you want to be able to outplay your player, then I would probably just either call or re-raise here just to see what this guy really has in middle position. That's the thing, you know. I mean, obviously, I feel like there's going to be a call here because it's hand of the week. A re-raise would probably take it down. But if I'm not confident, or if I'm new to the table and I don't know this player or whatever, I may just fold King Jack. They call it the rookie hand for a reason, you know.
It's such a dangerous hand, right?
It is.
After a raise. Now,
it
of course, this is a different type of game. It's deep stacked and it's 5-5, but still, I mean, part of the problem with King Jack is you don't know where you're at after the flop.
Yeah, it's a brutal
jack,
hand.
You might be behind Ace Jack. You flop a king, you're probably outkicked. Really, you're playing for two pair or better, and that's tough to do. It's a 5-5, so I don't know what the first five means in terms of raising, but 45 seems like a pretty decent raise to me.
Well, the other thing too is that oftentimes when we do this hand of the week, we're playing ABC poker because we're just using the cards we have.
Right.
But if I'm in this game and I'm on the button and I know these players, I could have any two cards here. So it doesn't matter that I have King Jack, really, if I'm going to play it that way.
That's true.
So I would 3-bet the guy and make it 120 to go, or, you know, or something like that, and see what he does then. And then if he calls, then I know, you know, we're going to be facing a totally different game after the flop. But I could just take it down right here with a raise, or a call if I know I'm going to float this guy and steal it from him when he chickens out on the turn. So it really just depends. It's so hard to analyze these hands because you don't... The cards don't matter when you're on the button in a deep stack game.
Yeah, and I should say it's a little confusing hand because he says four of us see the flop, so I don't know really where those other two players were, whether they were in between our action or after our action. So I guess it would change, too, if we had, you know, the middle position player and then, you know, the hijack and low jack and assassination, all those folks were the callers, and then we had a bunch of money in the pot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Versus raising at that point. Though even at that point, I'm more inclined to raise. You know, I did a nice squeeze in this last tournament that I played with King 10 and took it down, and that felt good. It always feels good to do
that. Feels good to do a squeeze.
You get seven callers, and you shove all in, everybody folds, and boom, you pick up a bunch of dead money. With
boom.
You can't. Boom. It's a dynamite. Okay, all right. Well, he did call, as I say, so four of us see the flop. And the flop is King-King-10 Rainbow. And the pre-flop raiser bets 75. And of course, so it's four of us at 45, so what?
180.
And this Razor, who bets 75, is sitting with 2,000 behind. He's a solid player. Our hero says he hasn't seen him do anything out of line this session, though he's seen him be tricky in the past. And then the player in between us folds, and it's on us now.
Hmm. See, this is brutal, because we called the rookie hand for a reason. If the guy is a preflop Razor, he could easily have king, queen, or ace, king. And we're screwed. Why do I insist on putting myself in this position every single week and listening to this stuff? I mean, really, what do you... You know, the guy could think that the two kings, you know, on the board, there's two kings on the board, so it's less likely that somebody has a king, so he's just betting his queens. You know, who knows? Mm-hmm. I hate this situation. You know, obviously I'm not going anywhere with three kings. If I raise, I'm basically putting my hand face up in that I'm telling him I have at least three kings. And if he can't beat me, he's going to fold. But if he can beat me, he's going to call. And then I'm, you know, or re-raise me. And then I'm screwed.
Or re-raise, yeah. Really put us to a test.
Yeah. So, and if we just call, that's kind of weird, you know. That seems like a bad play to just call.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm thinking I might have to go that route, and I'm not trying to be a wimp here. I'm doing it because, well, one, we didn't define our hand pre-flop, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, not that we're can't be completely scared about ace king or king queen, but it's a legitimate hand to be up against, as is pocket tens, I guess. So, my fear in raising here is. He says he's been solid tonight, so if that's the case and he doesn't have it, then we'd probably give him to fold, which is fine. Because we don't know really where we are now. We'll take the pot down. But he's been tricky in the past, so you know he could just decide, hey, you know what? I realize I haven't been tricky yet tonight. I'm going to be tricky now.
Yeah.
So if he raises, ABC Poker tells us he's got a better king, because he's not going to be raising with a weaker king, I don't think. And then we got to shut it down. Which I guess is also fine if he does have a better hand. But he could also be making that move if he doesn't have it, trying to represent a bigger king because he was the first to raise, so it's easy to believe he has ace king.
Yeah, the only problem with calling to me, and that's fine, I'm not saying it's a bad move either, but we're acting last, which means that we're facing another bet on the turn. And another bet on the river, and are we going to call those bets?
That's true.
If we're going to call those bets, then. You know?
Right. If I'm going to call, I'm not going to be passive the rest of the hand. I would be calling now and seeing whether he slows down on the turn. If he slows down the turn, I like that, obviously. If he keeps firing, then on the turn, I'm going to have to figure out where I am at that point in race. I mean, I can't call this bet and then call a turn bet and then be stuck on the river either calling yet another bet, which is ridiculous, or betting into him if he checks. He can't go down that road, I don't think.
Yeah.
If I just call here and hope that maybe he slows down and then gives me a little bit more confidence that maybe I have him beat, even though it's likely that he could slow down with ace-king there and try to trap us. But it gives me a little bit more confidence at that point. And then, but I gotta get more like more alive on the turn if I'm going to do it. I'd rather probably at this point, since I don't know where I am, save money and raise now and let him re-raise me and get out if that's the case.
Yeah.
Than the turn.
Yeah.
Because of the turn, I mean, now we're that pot's going to be so much bigger than it is now.
Yeah, you're looking at $330 if you just call and no one else is in the hand with you on the turn. He's going to bet $150, $160. And if you had raised to that now, you might have your answer. He might say, all right, and muck his queens or... Is ace queen, you know, because he's a continuation bet or, you know, whatever it is. But if he calls or raises you, you're re-raised, then you know you're beat and you can let it go. So just for the record, we were going to fold or re-raise pre-flop. Just yeah. For the record, help this hand a little bit. I think I like the raise here. It doesn't have to be three times it. It could be like make it, you know, 180 to go or something, you know, so it's not necessarily 250 or 225 or something, but, you know, it's enough to say, hey, I'm milking this pot and trying to get the most out of you without it being blatant. And then if the guy comes over the top or calls, you know, then if he calls, I think he'll check the turn, and then we'll get to see the river for a cheaper price than if we had gotten re-raised or called all of his bets the whole way. So I like a little smaller raise, not a min raise maybe, but a smallish raise.
Okay. Well, we decided to raise to 200.
Mm.
Pretty close to what you're saying.
Yeah, that's not too bad, yeah.
It's easier to cut out 200 chips than 180, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
The other player folds, so he must have been one of the blinds.
Okay.
And gets back to our villain who also calls. Doesn't raise, it's just calls.
Who just calls, yeah. Okay. Ugh. But, you know, again, that he might check the turn now to us because of that. It might save us money in the long run.
Right, right. There was a rainbow. It's interesting what he would call with there.
It could be that he's got a lock on the hand, or it could be that he's got a pair in between the kings and tens and not believing our kings. You know what right. I mean? Could be something like that.
I guess it could be like an ace-jack or a queen-jack, something that he's got a straight possibility maybe. Right?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I wouldn't bet on that. I wouldn't bet on like queen-jack here. First of all, I don't think he would have raised pre-flop a queen-jack.
Right.
And maybe even ace-jack he might not have. But then, you know, pre-flop. But then to bet into this board when he's got four callers is kind of dangerous. But with queen jack, I don't think he would call once we raised. That's a lot of money to call to try to hit it on a board where you could be drawn dead. Yep. So
exactly. Yep. All right. The turn is a 10. So our board now is king, king, 10, 10.
Okay. Obviously, we love that card, but it could be splitting the pot with the guy.
Right. And he says, at this point, I'm not sure what to put him on, but I have over 900 left and really don't want to lose it all. I know if I bet, he isn't calling me unless he has a king or a 10. He will fold aces. I think he may have a king, but no point in betting because it would just be a split pot, right? And maybe if I check, I can value bet something in the river if he has ace, ace, or queen, queen. So it is check to us, and that's our thought process. So what do we do?
I can't say there's no reason to bet here. He could have had Jack 10 and raised with Jack 10 preflop just because he was getting a little out of line, or even Ace 10 because he's middle position and no one had raised at that point. There's no reason not to raise with Ace 10 suited. So this guy is just betting his tens, not believing you have a king. I mean, if I have the nuts, which isn't really the nuts because 10-10's the nuts, but
right.
Essentially, if somebody has 10-10 here, they're not checking. Maybe they are. I don't know. I can't not bet here. I have the top boat. There's no boat that beats me. Only quads beat me. I would not just check here.
Yeah, you get the second best hand, and the best hand is unlikely. No possible, but unlikely. And, you know, I guess I've seen this kind of thinking in a lot of other games. You know, there's no sense in betting if it's a split pot, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, if we're at max rake, which I'm sure we are at this point,
I hope. Yeah.
I mean, what's the difference? I mean, it's not a tournament, so you're not really wasting true time. I mean, you're wasting time, and there's not time coming off the clock. You know, bet it. I mean, what's the downside? I mean, the downside, it takes the deal a little longer to count out the chips, and you split the pot. The upside is if the hand is weak, the other opponent's hand is weaker, and he calls, then you've made a lot more money.
That's right. He could have a 10, or he could have somehow. No, you could have a 10 somehow. You know, like somehow Jack 10.
As long as he doesn't have two 10s. As long as he has just one 10.
Right. If he has one 10, you're going to want him to call your bet. Why would you not take that opportunity? We're playing poker to win money, not to save time. So
now,
I would bet.
But the second part about checking and, you know, maybe trying to get more out of him on the river is, I guess, something to consider at that point. I mean, there's not a lot of cards that are going to come that are going to change his board for us, right?
Mm.
A
jack would be nice.
And if we bet now and they don't have, you know, they might be scared out now, where you're putting something smaller on the river, make it look like you're trying to steal it or something. You know, I guess I could see that line of thinking. But I would not bet because I'm worried that it's a split pot.
Right. That's not the reason. I mean, if you think this guy has queen jack somehow and you're hoping him to catch up by hitting a straight or something, that's fine. But that call on the turn just tells me he has a king or a 10, and why not expose that if it's the 10? So, you know, if he's got the same hand as you, then you're going to probably split the pot, depending on what the river is. And if he doesn't have the same hand as you, then you're getting a chance of making money for the whole pot. So, right. You know, I mean, there is some legitimate reasons for checking here, but I just don't feel like I need to check it when he called that turn.
Okay, well, our hero does decide to check. The river is an ace, so our final board is King, King, 10, 10, ace. Didn't really want to see that card.
Ugh. That is brutal.
But our opponent does check again.
Oh, I'll check behind.
He said, our hero did say, I got a read that the ace helped him. He looks like he wants me to bet.
Yeah, I'm checking behind because ace-ace could have been calling. Ace-ace could easily have made all these moves that player made. Mm-hmm. Ace-king could now be trapping with a bigger boat than ours. Ace-10 is losing to us, which is great. But do I really want to open up that can of worms and have this guy raise me all in at the end and not know what I have or what I'm up against, you know, because it looked like ace king the whole way. Yeah, I think I just check behind and be happy to win a, what's it, $408 pot or whatever?
Not a bad pot.
Yeah, I'd be happy to check this, and I'm not being chicken. It's just because I just don't know what hand to put him on, and the hands that I can put him on beat us. So, I have no problem checking now. If it was a 3, you know, or something, I'd have been betting, but
right, exactly.
This could easily beat us now.
All right, so our hero says, if I bet 200 and raises me all in, can I fold? Probably.
Maybe, yeah.
But why put yourself in that situation?
Yeah.
And he says, I have over 900 left, and, well, I wimp out and check. Well, I don't think it's wimping out. I think I agree with you that... Yeah. This is not a wimp out here. There's a legitimate reason to be concerned that this ace messed you up.
100%.
And you're right. If it was a 3 or 4 or something, then yeah, you might be closer on the wimpy train by checking here. But now with the ace, I think you're being solid. I mean, I'm sure somebody can make a case for betting and trying to get more value here if you're wrong. But it's certainly not a wimp here to check.
Yeah, I think,
all the time, so.
Well, you know, and if the guy turns over ace 10, all right, so you missed maybe a few bucks. But if he turns over ace king, then you saved a few bucks. Now, I'm not trying to get into the limit way of thinking, but you know what? There's just so many what ifs. There's no upside to betting 200 and chopping the pot, or there's no upside to betting 200 and having him raise you and having to fold that 200. So we'll just check it down and be happy to win 560 or whatever it is, 580.
Well, here's the situation where I think betting has two results that are devastating to you, I think. One is him just calling and having a bigger hand, and you just put more money into a pot that you didn't need to. And two is him raising all in, as we said, and putting you to a test that might be unnecessary.
Yeah.
The only good thing is if he has a weaker hand, you get... Yeah, you get a little bit more money out of it. I think there's just so much more risk here than reward.
Well, you know, all of our fans are clamoring for the Lee Childs analysis of things, so he would say the most important thing in poker is to make easy and decisions for yourself. The easier decisions, the easier poker is, and for me, why put yourself to a hard decision when you don't have to in this situation? That's a big pot. It's a huge percentage of your stack. And just check it down and be happy with if you win. And if you lose, be happy that you saved money.
All right. Well, our hero says the ace did help his opponent out as he turns over ace 10.
Yeah.
And our opponent says, thank you for checking. I figure we both had the 10. I would have called a bet thinking 10's full of aces were good. So, Nick's final question, did I mess up and should I have bet? I really felt there was no way he had 10 and would only call if he had a king or a hand that beats me. I think we answered that, right?
Yeah, we answered that.
But congratulations on a nice pot there.
Yeah, it was a nice little pot and got lucky with King Jack. Of course, now it worked out for him, but I think if he had re-raised pre-flop, he would have taken it down then and not faced this dilemma. You know what I mean? I'm just saying that could have happened too. So he was fortunate that he didn't and it worked out this way, but could have very easily been the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Nick. Well, we appreciate you sending your hands of the week and remind everybody else to send us their hand of the week to podcast@andyupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something great like we're going to send Nick a copy of the ebook you called me with. What? by Rick Danford, which is available for just $1.99 on Amazon.com.
Excellent. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.